So, you know, given that this presentation is about parents and caregivers and involvement in TFCBT, I thought I would share a little anecdote to let you know about how I learned everything that I know about parenting, which isn't much, but what I did do know. So almost 30 years ago, I was doing our first grant that we ever wrote together, Judy and I, and I was visiting at her house. She had three young girls at the time, ages 2, 3, and 4. And, you know, it was about 8 o'clock, approaching bedtime for these very young children, and I all of a sudden heard Judy say to these little girls, "Girls, do you know what time it is?" And they looked at her and I said, "Mommy, it's bedtime." I thought, wow, that's so weird, you know? And so these girls raced up to the second floor of their house and I guess got in bed, you know. Judy goes up there. She's not up there more than like 2 minutes. She comes back down, not a peep out of these girls, and we go back to working on this first research grant. I thought, oh my God, what has she got, like ice cream and popcorn and whatever up there? And I thought, that she's got it down. I mean, Judy Cohen, you know, this young child psychiatrist has really got parenting down, right? So I go home, right? A little later, it's about 9:30. Of course, my two-year-old son, he's still up at 9:30. Her girls are fast asleep at 8 o'clock, right? I get home, it's 9:30, and I said to my son Michael, he's two, "Michael, do you know what time it is?" I said, "Bedtime." Well, then I spent the next 15 minutes chasing him down. And he had the temper tantrum of tempter tantrums for the next 10 minutes because Daddy was home and was going to help him go to bed. And so I realized at that point early in my career that there's something I'm not doing right here, right? So all I learned about parenting was from Judy, just in that 1 5-minute segment that night. So as Judy's been talking about in regard to TFCBT, you know, the work with the caregiver or the parent is really integral. And as Judy mentioned, they're involved every step of the way. And I have to tell you, I've always found it odd over the years when therapists have done sort of this kind of therapy with kids where they see the kid for like the entire hour and then they, quote, check in with the parent for the last 5 minutes. And that's therapy with children. And I've always found it really bizarre because I've never understood the whole idea around how we therapists could have such a dramatic impact on kids' lives, you know, one time a week, if that, when these parents are with these children 24/7. And so from my perspective, you know, the work we do with parents just is completely resonating with my philosophy about children, that parents are integral to the lives of these kids. And if we don't involve them in the treatment and help them to know how to deal with what's gone on in these children's lives and help them feel more confident and more effective as parents, then I think we're doing these kids a disservice. So that's really the basis for why TFCBT is so integral, or is parenting so integral in TFCBT. So since what I'm talking about overlaps a lot with what Judy talked about, I thought I would just use a little illustration, a real live illustration, to just demonstrate the early work with parents in TFCBT. And I'm changing the facts associated with this case because I want to protect the privacy and confidentiality, of course, of the family. But yeah, some of you may be aware that in Pittsburgh, 4 weeks ago tomorrow, there was a stabbing incident in a local high school in which 20 students were stabbed. Thank God none of them has died and none appear likely to die. And one security officer. So 21 people were stabbed and by this one suspect who was a student at the school. But in any event, last week I had the opportunity to see this girl, 15 years old, who's a high school student at the school where this incident occurred. And she was not one of the stabbing victims nor was she witnessing the actual episode of violence, but she was on the school property at the time. So they called our center. We've been involved with the school from the outset in terms of education and resources, and they know our center is a referral source. So I saw this girl and her mom last Friday. And right from the very outset, the parent was involved. I mean, the background information and interviewing and so forth was equally done with the parent as it was with this 15-year-old girl. And then I wanted to get some idea through an objective instrument in regard to any post-traumatic stress symptoms that this girl might be presenting with. And in order to get that information, I gave both the girl, but also her mother, an objective instrument to assess PTSD. And interestingly enough, in this particular case, the youth's own self-perception of her PTSD symptoms matched up pretty well with the mom's perception of the girl's PTSD symptoms. That's not always true. Sometimes the kid rates herself very highly and the parent's not aware of the symptoms, but in this particular case, both the youth and the mom rated the youngster as having fairly severe PTSD symptoms. So just from the very start, in terms of the assessment, this parent was integrally involved in the process, and I think I was communicating right from the outset that she would be involved every step of the way. And that was the message I wanted this parent to have. After we had spent some time with the interviewing and the objective measures and so forth, I really right off the bat began to do some psychoeducation, as Judy was talking about, in regard to trauma exposure and PTSD and that kind of thing. And I did this jointly with both the mom and with the girl, but I also did it separately with them as well. And I think the two things that I tried to convey were, one, that the kinds of reactions this girl was having in response to the trauma were quite normal, that this was a really bad event that happened to a kid, and she was responding with stress and anxiety, sleep problems and avoidance, hypervigilance and so forth, very common symptoms after a traumatic event such as this. And both the kid and the parent, I think, felt very relieved that, you know, the response that this girl was having was quite normal in response to a traumatic event. But I tell you what, the most important thing that I did that day, by far, the most important thing that I did in regard to psychoeducation, not only with the youth, but also with the mom, was to offer hope. You know, a lot of people have the notion out there that if a kid's exposed to a trauma, they're doomed. I mean, one of the things, and just to bring the Sandusky thing, since we're here at Penn State, and this is where sort of the genesis for this meeting and this center that's developed here, that one of the things that I heard a lot on the local news in Pittsburgh about Sandusky was that the kids who were victimized, that they were doomed for life. And that's not true. There is hope. And one of the things I was able to say to this mom and to this youth is that the treatment that we were going to be using to help her, TFCBT, does result in significant improvement 80 to 85% of the time. That's a big percentage. I mean, it's not 100%, we wished it were, but it's a huge percentage of the time. That was a second sigh of relief for this family, because they didn't know what was going to happen. You know, was this girl going to really be subject to PTSD symptoms, not only in the short run, but in the longer run, and deeply affect their life? So the fact that they were beginning to understand that there was a lot of hope, and mom needed hope. I mean, this is a situation where, you know, the most important job most parents feel that they have is to protect their children. And here was a situation where her daughter wasn't protected. The mom wasn't blaming herself, but she was feeling helpless about what she could do. And I was telling them in that very first meeting, not 10 meetings down the road, in the first meeting, that there would be hope. I gave the mom a bunch of educational resources on tips for dealing with adolescents with trauma. I gave mom some resources from the, you know, the National Child Traumatic Stress Network in regard to how to deal with the aftermath of mass violence incidents. So working with the mom and this daughter together right from the very start. Now, as it turned out with this girl, the biggest symptom that she had is that she decided she didn't want to go to school anymore. And that's not surprising, right, given what happened there. And she had been, you know, getting sick and going to the nurse's office and getting an early dismissal. And then more recently, she wasn't going at all. And I asked her and the mom when they first came in on Friday if she had been to school that day. And she said, well, they got to school. She kind of had some panic symptoms. Then the mom took her home. So this girl had been out of home, out of school, staying at home. And the mom wanting to do the right thing. She sees the panic in her daughter and therefore thinking, I need to have her stay at home. Because there's relief when she's at home. And of course, as Judy talked about in regard to gradual exposure with regard to our treatment, we need to expose kids to the things that they're afraid of gradually and incrementally. So again, here in the first meeting with this family, and given that she was avoiding school, I needed to set up that in vivo mastery paradigm that Judy talked about, because I needed to help her get back to school. Now, remember, you know, we're getting near the end of the school year. I mean, I guess I could have said, well, heck with it. She misses school for the rest of this year. We'll worry about it in the fall. Well, think about that. You know, 3 or 4 more weeks of missing school. You're avoiding school the entire summer. Guess what? When she comes back after Labor Day, she ain't going to school. So I thought it was essential that I work with this mom and this girl to get her back to school immediately. So we set up a plan, mom and I and this girl, about how to help her get back to school yesterday. And we decided she would go to school for 2 hours yesterday. Start out with sort of a smaller step, not the whole day, for 2 hours, and then I would call them late yesterday morning, which I did, and she did go to school. She stayed for the 2 hours, and you know what she said to me? Wasn't so bad. I think I can stay the whole day today. Now, I haven't talked with them yet. I don't know how it's worked out, but the point is that I needed to work with mom, and I said to mom, you know what? When you drop her off at school, she might seem very anxious. We worked on some relaxation, as Judy talked about briefly at the end of the evaluation Friday. I asked her to practice that over the weekend and take it with her, you know, in the car emotionally on Monday morning. And I said, if she's really afraid to get out of the car yesterday, I said, you need to urge her. You need to encourage her, and it'll work out okay. And that's what happened. So just by way of that particular example of how in TFCBT, we're involving parents every step of the way. They are collaborators with us. Now, I have to say, they're not always as supportive and caring as this particular mom. Certainly, all of us who work in the mental health field work with parents that, you know, pose some level of resistance and difficulty by way of engagement. But it's our job. I mean, it's our job to engage effectively. Most of the families that we see in our Center for Traumatic Stress at AGH in Pittsburgh are involved in the child welfare system. You know, these kids have been victims of sexual abuse or physical abuse, witnessed domestic violence or other community violence. So they've been involved in the child welfare system. And they often arrive at our program feeling judged. They arrive at our program feeling judged. You know, maybe they've made some mistakes, right? Of course. Maybe they live with different perpetrators who have hurt their children or themselves. They've made some mistakes, they have some regrets. But when they come to our doorstep, they're ready to be judged one more time. They're ready to be shamed one more time. And the first and most important part of the work that we need to do with parents in that kind of situation is not judge, and not blame, and not shame. And thank them for bringing their youth to our center to get help despite the many hurdles that they've had to jump over to get there. So just by way of engagement with parents, I have to tell you the very first step in TFCBT is always praising parents for getting their kids to our center. Because most kids who have been exposed to maltreatment and other trauma are never identified, never get help and never get evidence-based help. But yet this mom or this dad or these parents had the courage to come. And we need to recognize that and make sure we're focusing on that right from the very get-go when we see them. And remember, if we're modeling praise for parents by praising them, then hopefully they in turn can do the same for their kids, right? So those are some of the, you know, the background principles of parenting with TF-CBT. They're truly integral to the process. You know, Judy's talked about the RCTs. I'm not going to go into that, but I did want to mention a word about the treatment research that parents who are involved in TF-CBT and all the studies that we have done, you know, we find significant reductions in parental distress and anxiety. Now remember, when parents are involved in TF-CBT, the focus largely is on the child and the sequelae the child has experienced related to their trauma. So we're focusing on the child, but we're also focusing on parenting reactions and their own response to the child's traumatic experience. And of course, sometimes the parent has been through the same event, if there's been a death, you know, that sort of situation. So there are reductions in parental distress, reductions in parental depression, reductions in parental PTSD, increases in parenting support, increasing in parental effectiveness in their skills. So you can imagine by parents making those kinds of changes by way of participation in TF-CBT, that alone is going to set the foundation for this family to heal by involving that parent. And I'm trying, and you know, many parents when they first see us, they're truly expecting to just drop the kid off at the door, right? That's what they expect, and they're very surprised to learn that we want them involved and that we'll spend about half of every session with that parent and not most of the session with the child. And often they are of the belief when we get started that we're wanting to involve them because we're going to blame them. Right? It's your fault. That's why we need to see you. We're going to tell you what a bad parent you are. When really the reality is we want to work with that parent because they are the person in this youngster's life. Even if there's conflict and strain, they are still the most important people in these children's lives. And we have to find a way to collaborate with these parents to help them become more effective at home. And that's the message we convey. That's the message that we let them know as to why they're going to be involved in TF-CBT week in and week out. Judy showed you these slides. I'm showing them again. I just like the colors of the slide. but I just want to point out that, as Judy mentioned, the parenting part of TF-CBT goes on every week, and it goes on throughout the course of treatment, right? You know, sometimes we get involved in all these TF-CBT components, and we kind of lose sight of the fact that the parents are involved every single week. So, you know, we have a unique center in Pittsburgh. You know, we're a referral center for kids who have been exposed to trauma and child maltreatment. I got 5 minutes, wow. Okay, that's great, because Judy covered most of the stuff I was going to talk about anyway. So, but it's essential to involve parents because kids have behavior problems. And I don't know what kind of magic you guys do with your work, but kids' behavior problems don't get better just by seeing the kid, right? You have to have adults involved in the treatment and adults who can learn to praise and set up more positive environments and work with us to develop behavioral interventions. So parents are integral to deal with these behavior problems. We define parents in many different ways. They can be foster parents, grandparents, kinship foster care, and sometimes when kids are in residential care, it may be a direct care staff member who's being involved. As you can tell by my discussion already, engagement is huge at the front end. We want to know what the parents care about. You know, the kids, I mean, we may care about trauma and curing kids from the sequelae associated with child abuse, but the parents may care about behavior problems. They may care about drug abuse. They may care about the fact that the kid is going to be suspended from school. We have to align the goals of TFCBT with the goals that the parents care most about with regard to their child. If we don't, you're not going to see those kids because the parents are bringing the kids to us. So that's a huge part of the engagement. We also want to find out about previous experiences in therapy and also what those experiences were like, any stigma associated with therapy, because we want to make sure we're doing it better this time. Talked about that. So I think I've talked a lot about this through my clinical example. These are some common issues that we find in parents where kids have been exposed to maltreatment or other kinds of trauma: inappropriate self-blame and guilt, inappropriate child blame, overprotectiveness. Often there's a relationship between inappropriate self-blame and becoming overly permissive. Parents can feel like, well, the kids have been through too much, and I just can't make them go to bed on time. I can't make them eat what they're supposed to eat. I can't make them do their homework and so forth. So we look for these key issues in parenting that may have an impact on the child's experience and on the parent's parenting. Okay. Judy talked about cognitive processing with the child. It's critical to do the same work with the parent, because the parent may have a variety of distortions and unhelpful thoughts related to the child's trauma, such as, I should have known this would happen. You know, my child will never be happy, can never recover from this. My child's childhood is ruined, my family is destroyed. You know, those kinds of cognitions are going to get in the way. It breeds helplessness, it breeds hopelessness. So we want to work with the parent in a parallel fashion that Judy described with the kid to work on these maladaptive cognitions and help parents have hope. The more hope they have, the better off they're going to be, and in the long run, the better off the child's going to be. And Judy talked about the joint sessions, and you know, just a couple of last points. We work with a lot of parents who at the outset of therapy are unsupportive, right? They may not believe the child was abused. They may feel the child never liked the stepfather who sexually assaulted them, and they're making it up. And you know, we don't turn those parents away. It's our job to work with those parents right from the get-go and help them make some progress over time. And we need to recognize why that parent might not believe that the child was abused. Well, maybe this is the breadwinner in the family. Maybe they're going to have to move now. Maybe they're going to have to change their school where the child goes, and so on and so forth. Maybe the sexual abuser is the father of the youngest child in the family, right? Those kinds of things. So we try to meet parents where they are and go forward from there, even if they're unsupportive and they don't believe. When the actual caretaker is the perpetrator of the abuse, then we would not use TFCBT. But there are other models like David Kolko's model, Alternatives for Families, Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, or AFCBT that might be appropriate for those kinds of situations. So I'll just end by commenting that, you know, parents are just so important in the lives of children, whoever the caregiver is. And it's just essential that we as therapists incorporate them, collaborate with them, and help them become sort of key co-agents of change. Thanks.